Okay, welcome everybody to this evening's teleseminar called How to Create Information Products That Sell. My name is Damien Sen and I'm your host for this evening, and I'll very shortly be welcoming our very special guest, best-selling author Nick Williams, to the call in a moment from now. But before I actually welcome Nick, I just wanted to give you a bit of a feel for how this call is going to work this evening. Now, the call is going to run for roughly an hour, and in the first 15 minutes of the call, I'll actually be asking Nick some various questions around how to actually create information products, and in particular, how to create information products that sell. And towards the end of the call, we'll also have an opportunity, if you do have any personal questions that you would like to ask Nick, I'm going to open up the line at the end of the call. Now, when I actually do open the line on the call, I'm just going to ask you to press 6 to unmute yourself. And once you've actually asked your question, if you could just press 6 again to mute out the line. And the reason why we get you to mute out the line is just so we have a nice, crisp, clean recording to share with people who couldn't actually make the call this evening. Now, we're joined by people from 8 different countries around the world. So whether you're in the US, UK, Germany, Australia, Canada, Portugal, South Africa or New Zealand, I'd just like to welcome you to the call. And it's great to have an international call. Excellent. Now, I just thought I'd start off with just by giving a little bit of a background about how I know Nick. Now, I first came across Nick probably 3.5 years ago, around about the time where I was actually stepping out from my corporate job into actually pursuing and chasing after my passions. And I was very fortunate enough to actually see Nick deliver a workshop at the Mind Body Spirit Festival here in London. And I was so taken with his delivery style, his rapport with the audience, and also the ideas that he was sharing, that I immediately bought his book called The Work We Were Born to Do, and literally took it home that evening after the workshop, and within a couple of days had read the book cover to cover. And for those of you who are thinking about changing careers or really finding the things that excite you, I can't recommend that book highly enough, and certainly had a profound impact on my own life. And from reading that book, I've stayed in touch with Nick over the years and certainly seen him grow from also initially being a published author to now really becoming very, very successful online selling and distributing his own products via the web. So it's with great pleasure that I actually welcome Nick to the call, and I'm certainly fascinated to hear some of the secrets he's got to share this evening. So welcome, Nick. I'd like to welcome you to the call. Yeah, how's it going?
Great, thank you very much. Don't mean to, I was talking to myself.
Brilliant.
Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, no, it's a great pleasure to have you here this evening. Now, I guess with the call this evening, I thought I'd start off with just asking you a little bit more about your own personal journey and how you actually came to creating information products.
Yeah, well, I suppose I've always had a personal passion for sharing ideas and information with people. So that's been my kind of driving force. I've very much used my own life and my own personal changes as a kind of example of what I teach. And, you know, I used to be in the computer world and sell computers to Japanese banks in the City of London, and was, you know, very unhappy in the end doing that. So when I discovered the work that I was born to do, which was about 20 years ago, and it was to more be creative and to inspire people, you know, as I made the changes myself, I was always curious about how I could help other people, because it feels to me that one of the things that, you know, life's about is that we have experiences, we grow, we learn stuff, and one of our natural impulses is to want to share what we've learned with other people. So it's always felt a big part of my life's journey and my life's purpose is to make changes in my own life and then teach other people how to make those changes. So my career has been firstly as a speaker, then as a workshop leader and a coach, and then a few years ago as an author. So I've always been interested in how you package your information and ideas and experience and wisdom and get them out to a big audience. So that's been my journey until the last couple of years, and that's when I've got into information products. But for me, the desire behind anything, you know, and especially information products, is the desire to serve and make a difference in the lives of other people.
Brilliant. Just a little bit about your own transition, Nick. So you're working in the computer industry to then, or leaving that all behind you, and and embarking on a quite a radical transformation. And
I think there are at least two parts of the journey for most people. Number one part of the journey, and that's why I wrote The Work We Were Born to Do, is to discover the work you were born to do, because I think for many people that's the hard part of the equation. It's like, okay, well, I know what I'm not here for. I got to a point in my life where I'd realised that I was not put on this planet to sell computers to Japanese banks. That's clear. But then the bigger question for me, and it is for most of us, is, okay, well, I know what I don't want. I know what I'm not here for. So what am I here for? And to me, it is about asking those bigger and kind of more significant questions. And sometimes those answers come quickly, and sometimes those answers come gently and gradually. One of the big things that I've certainly faced, and I know a lot of people on this call will recognize when I say it, is as soon as you get inspired and know what you're really about, I knew that I wanted to make a big change, the twin force of inspiration in my experience is what I call resistance. It's the way we kind of begin to get scared and talk ourselves out of things and rationalize away and come up with excuses and basically procrastinate so that we don't make the changes that we want to make. So for many of us, even when we discover what we really want to be doing, then the resistance kicks in big time, and we start trying to talk ourselves out of it and pretend that we never hit on the truth and try to run away from the truth because it scares us too much.
And was it a lengthy process for you actually discovering what it was you were born to do?
Yeah, well, I think I got to the essence of it, which was to serve, to make a difference, to share ideas, to teach and to inspire people. So I think I knew the essence of it, but the form is continually evolving. So, that's one of the things when I talk to people about the Work We're Born to Do idea is that, once you hit on it, it will constantly evolve. So, the way my business looks today is not the way it looked 5 years ago or 10 years ago or 15 years ago. I've grown, changed and understood more stuff, and my business reflects that, and I think I probably understand things more deeply as I go along, or I hope I do. And again, my business reflects that.
Yeah.
So, our businesses, for those of us that want to be self-employed, and I presume most people on this call are either wanting to be or are self-employed, it's a wonderful journey of evolution, and, for me, it's a wonderful excuse just to keep pursuing my own personal growth journey. I'm just fascinated, and one of my personal passions is just personal growth and becoming who I can become. And, in a way, on one level, I just get paid to share my own journey with other people and teach what I've learned to them. Kind of keep pioneering in my own life and then teach people what I've done and help them do the same for themselves.
Brilliant. Now, one thing that I see when people actually make that decision to start taking some steps forward to a more empowered, more fulfilling, a more creative way of living, they often feel held back by the fact that they can't see the entire picture. Now, I guess from what you're saying about this whole evolution, maybe you don't need to see the entire picture up front. Would that be right?
I think sometimes it's just as well we don't see the entire picture, because if we get a sense of what it could be, we'd probably get even more scared because we don't know how we're going to do that. And I think the good side of it being an evolutionary process is that, we just get to grow bit by bit and, deal with the assignments in front of us as we grow as people, in confidence and in integrity and in creativity and in passion. As we grow, then we get more kind of assignments and we get bigger and bigger possibilities and opportunities in our lives. So and my great belief, I meet so many people that are employed and want to be self-employed, and it seems such a big leap and a big transition that they never see how they're going to do it. And I think I've come to encapsulate my philosophy of life in a new statement that I came up with about a month ago, and I call it baby steps and breakthroughs. I think what we totally underestimate is the power of just taking continual baby steps in a direction that we're inspired about or passionate about or feel called to. And what most people don't realize is if you just take a little step every day in a new direction, those steps become cumulative and then become breakthroughs. So for me, even though I left the corporate world, that was a massive breakthrough after a lot of baby steps to start my own business. Then starting my own business was a series of new baby steps. So I think it's a kind of wonderful cycle that you take baby steps and then you have a breakthrough and then you have a breakthrough and you start taking new baby steps and then you have another breakthrough down the line. And I'm always open to miracles and amazing things happening. And I think sometimes those things happen when we've invested, time and energy in the baby steps.
Yeah. Brilliant. I think it's great advice. Now, you also mentioned a very interesting little word a little bit earlier on when you were talking about actually taking steps out. And that's the whole concept of resistance. Everyone that I meet on this journey, yeah, when they're actually taking steps out into the world, they start to experience some level of resistance around who they are, what they're here to do.
Yeah.
I was just wondering if you could share some insight into, first of all, what is resistance? And secondly, I guess, how people can actually transform resistance into something that's useful for them.
Sure, well, let's do a quick couple of minutes on it.
Yeah.
The way I've come to understand resistance, or kind of explain it and describe it, is, you know, I believe there's two parts to us. There's our soul, whatever you want to call that deeper self that is the true us, and that just wants to be creative and express itself and, you know, stretch itself out into the world in positive and helpful ways and creative ways. And then there's another part of us that's our personality, which is more that ego part of us. And I think, you know, we're basically in a daily encounter, in a battle between those two things. Our soul wants us to expand and take risks and be all we can be, and our ego is saying, no, stay small, stay afraid, don't do that, you look stupid, don't do that, you'll fail, you know, people will reject you, you won't belong anymore, they'll stop loving you, and, you know, all the messages that we give ourselves. So I think if you're not wanting to do anything particularly inspiring in your life, you probably won't encounter resistance too much. So if you want to go from working in McDonald's to become a telemarketeer or something like that, you're probably not going to experience too much resistance, because it's like a sideways move.
Uh-huh.
But as soon as you start moving towards what you're really here for on this planet, which is probably something inspiring or creative, as soon as you move towards your soul's purpose, you know, whatever that might be, then, in my experience, says you're likely to hit resistance. And I wouldn't say it's inevitable, because some people seem to get a smooth ride, but in my experience, most people don't have a smooth ride. Most people's paths are littered with doubts and obstacles and insecurities and lack of confidence and who am I to do this and all those kind of questions. So I think one of the myths that many people have is that you can't start doing what you really want to do until you've got rid of your resistance. And I think that's another way that resistance actually kind of wins the battle. When in fact, you know, my experience is the best way to beat resistance is to encounter it every day and take a little step beyond it every day. So what I mean by that is, you know, sometimes you might for years have been wanting to write your book, and you're never going to be free of resistance to write your book. But as you start writing your book, you grow in confidence and you grow in stature, you know, as you do each page and each word and each chapter. And just by turning up and doing your work, resistance begins to dissolve and to fade away. So, you know, resistance shows up in lots of different ways. It shows up through procrastination, like I said. It comes through making excuses. It comes via making, you know, emotional drama in our life and keep distracting ourselves from what's really important to us. And resistance can be also turn up as, you know, being too busy, and we're always busy doing some stuff, but the stuff we really want to do, we never get around to doing. You know, tons of ways that we all resist. Even addictions, I think, can be forms of resistance, because it means we don't turn up and, you know, be as creative as we could be.
Yeah.
So, you know, my positive message, in a way, around resistance is everybody experiences it. So, you know, it's a pain in the ass, but we all have to deal with it, because most people have it, you know, and as far as I can tell, most people have it. Some have it so strongly they don't even realize they've got it. They're just so caught in it.
Sure.
But the real, really good news about resistance is, although it's a pain and, you know, we have to deal with it, is that it can be beaten. You know, if resistance couldn't be beaten, there'd be no works of art, there'd be no inspired businesses, there'd be no you know, entrepreneurs, there'd be no spiritual movements on the planet. You know, everything beautiful, inspired and creative that exists on the planet today, to me, is a testimony of people overcoming their resistance. So I think we sometimes think that, you know, people that are successful don't have resistance, because they can't have, because they've done something. But I think if you just scratch beneath the surface of most people, if they're really honest, you know, most people have had to deal with rather, you know, sometimes small, sometimes really massive obstacles and resistance to get to where they've got to. So don't think you've got to beat resistance to start. You know, start and then you'll beat resistance.
Brilliant. I think that's very sound advice.
Yeah.
So just on your own journey, Nick, have you found that over time resistance has dropped off, or you're just experiencing different kinds of resistance as you move along and grow on your own journey?
I think I've come to describe resistance as like a many-headed monster. You cut off a few heads and you've beaten it. new ones appear.
Mm-hmm.
I still encounter resistance on a regular basis. But I've got better at just recognising that it is resistance. So instead of kind of, you know, wailing and saying, well, how come things are still difficult sometimes and how come I still don't find some things as easy as I'd like to, I just realise that that's resistance, but I've kind of built up a strong enough muscle in me now, if you like, that I just get down and do my work even though I'm in resistance. I don't wait for a resistance-free day. I just do it every day, even if I don't feel like it. And, you know, one of the best bits of kind of wisdom I heard around it is somebody asked Somerset Maugham once, you know, the writer. They said to him, do you write when you're inspired or do you write by, at a particular time every day? And his answer was beautiful. He said, I sit down to write every day at 9:30 in the morning. Luckily, inspiration turns up every day at 9:30 in the morning.
Great.
And what he meant by that was, you know, the idea that sometimes we're not inspired to do our work, but when we start doing our work, we get inspired. And I think that's the kind of philosophy that I've tried to adopt for myself now, which is sometimes I don't feel like doing what I know I really want to be doing, but when I start doing it, I start feeling better. So it's just busting through that resistance and just getting on with it.
Yeah, yeah.
And in a way, just doing the grunt work, which is just turning up, even if you feel crap or even if you feel inspired, you just turn up anyway.
Yeah.
You know, so I call that more of a kind of professional attitude. You know?
Yeah.
When we're still, you know, before we turn professional in a way, what we think is we're waiting to have busted through our resistance and then we'll start. But professional knows they just need to do their work every day.
Brilliant. And I was just wondering if you could share, like, I guess the call's just really about understanding that whole information product creation process. And I was just wondering if you could share some insight into how you actually created your first book and, I guess, the writing journey around creating that first book. That first work, was it an easy process or did you experience challenges along the way?
In some respects it was easy, in some respects it was difficult. You know, I got to my late 30s and I think ever since I was a kid, and I kept saying to myself, one day I might write a book, one day I might write a book. And I think I got to my late 30s and then, you know, I basically said to myself, well, am I going to keep saying one day for the rest of my life, or is this, you know, a dream waiting to be made real? So I just started to write a bit, and I started to write articles, and then, you know, got a few of those published, and that was such a thrill just to see my name in print and to share ideas with people. And then luckily through my involvement with Alternatives in St James's in London, I was involved with that, and I got to know some of the major publishers because they were always putting speakers up for us. So eventually I wrote a bit and I put a publishing proposal together and sent it out to the publishers that were interested in the Mind, Body, Spirit area, and one of them then said, we'd like to publish it. And I had what, you know, excuse my language for a minute, I don't offend anybody, but I had what I call a no-shit moment, which is where I went, oh, shit, they're really serious. Seriously. And part of me was, I loved the idea of writing a book, but when it actually came to signing a contract and making a commitment to write a book, part of me was utterly terrified. You know, my resistance kicked in big time.
Yeah.
So, you know, I have some kind of spiritual practice for myself, so I just went into kind of meditation and just asked myself the deep question. It's like, is it an ego trip for me to write a book, or is it part of my real life purpose to write a book? And it was like my soul screamed back at me and said, write the bloody book.
You're
here to write, you're here to communicate. So I just signed the contract and I sent it back, and from that moment I felt a wave of peace kind of flow over me. Having made that commitment, I busted through some resistance, and then for the next 3 months, I had 3 months to finish writing the book.
Yeah.
The writing just flowed. I wrote for between 3 and 13 hours every day, I think, you know.
Wow.
I carved out some time to do it, and I was just able to flow, and I ended up overwriting. I think the book was about 90,000 words. I think I wrote about 120,000 words.
Okay.
So yes, I had resistance, but once I busted through the resistance, it was like a door opened inside me. So, you know, another way through resistance, just generally for everyone listening, is just commitment. You know, because sometimes we can sit on the fence forever, again, saying, well, you know, when I feel better, then I'll commit. And I think sometimes you just have to commit, and then you start feeling better.
Brilliant.
And that's a tough one for many of us, because it's like, you know, commitment is not a word we like. We like our freedom.
Yeah.
But I think there's a paradoxical thing, which is when you commit to the things that you really love and you're really here for, it gives you a new kind of freedom, because in a way you do cut off distractions and you just commit to what you're really here for.
Brilliant.
And, you know, I've been thrilled that the book's had such a good reception. You know, it's been out for 8 years now and it's still selling reasonably well, and it's, you know, it's transformed my life. You know, I love writing. I love the creative act of writing. and I love being a published author. So those two things for me are the two great joys. You know, I love communicating on paper and getting ideas across, and the doors that it's opened for me as an author have just been, you know, astonishing, and I'm just full of gratitude for my life being an author.
Yeah, yeah. Brilliant. Now, on the call, like, I'm very aware that we have some very, very talented people listening in this evening. They could be, like, in the world of coaching, consulting, therapies, trainers. Now, like, a lot of people have so much great information inside their minds that they're sharing on a regular day with their clients, the audiences that they face. But when it actually comes to taking those ideas that are in their head and putting it down on paper, people do experience challenge. And yeah. I was just wondering if you could probably just actually help these people on the call by just, I guess, laying out the terrain for people. You know, what are the actual key elements that are necessary to actually create a successful information product and an information product business?
Well, let me just maybe speak for a minute about how I made the transition from books to information products.
Okay, brilliant.
And then, you know, a bit about how you start creating your information products. You know, I'm going to sound maybe a slightly ungrateful here. I've now written 5 books, you know, and I'm grateful for having done that. And they've opened tremendous doors for me. And what I found was that even being a reasonably successful author does not guarantee a hugely successful business. You know, a $12.99 book, I get 7.5% royalty on it. So I get maybe 85 pence royalty on it. So, you know, that's not a lot of money, you know, and I'm not complaining because, of, you know, it's been wonderful to be an author, but I think I had a bit of a fantasy that being an author would suddenly guarantee, you know, people flocking to my door.
Yeah.
And some did and some do, and I realised that, you know, the breakthrough for me was a couple of years ago. I was on a teleseminar myself. I was a participant, and I was the guy leading it was an information entrepreneur himself. He was an American guy, and he said something, and I'll tell you what he said in a minute. And for me, the light suddenly went on. And what he said was, you might want to think about becoming an information entrepreneur when you realize that putting all your expertise in a $20 book is keeping you poor. So you might want to think about becoming an information entrepreneur when you realize that putting all your expertise in a $20 book is keeping you poor. And, you know, I wasn't poor, but I was thinking, that's very true. You know, I've put everything I know into books, and what do I get? I get 80 pence for every book that I sell.
Mm.
That doesn't seem to me like a great deal. So I'm not complaining. On one level, I'm complaining. On another level, I'm immensely grateful. But it just made me realize that, you know, putting all your expertise in a book is not necessarily the most profitable way of sharing your expertise with people. So that got me onto thinking about, well, how else can I share information with people and ideas? And I worked with a guy called Rick Thorne, who I know you know.
Yeah.
He's been a presenter through Alternatives. And Rick Thorne is a teaching and learning expert, and he's coached me for several years, and I really learned a lot from him. And I came away with a couple of major things, which I'll share with you. And he helped me understand that as an author and a speaker and a coach, and as an expert, if you like, I have 2 jobs to do. The first job is to inspire people to new possibilities. So for me, you know, that possibility that I inspire people to is that they can love their work, that their work can be meaningful to them. It doesn't have to be hard work and slog and struggle. And that they can actually make money doing what they love, and they could even set up a business around the work that they love and prosper doing it. You know, that's the possibility that I inspire people to. But in a way, I can do that. You know, in a way, I can do that in a minute. You know, on a radio station or here or whatever I'm doing or in an article, I can inspire people to that possibility in a moment. So realizing that we have 2 jobs to do, the second job is that you then need to teach people how they can create that possibility for themselves.
Yeah.
And if you look at most books, you know, if that's one way of sharing information with people, what most books do is inspire you to new possibilities. They say, yeah, you could do this. Yes, you could do this. But what books don't often do is teach you the how-to of doing it. So one of the reasons I started creating information products was really to do the much more focused part of how-to for people. So, you know, I can go on the radio or I can have an article about me in the press, and that inspires people to a new possibility. And then if they want more of the how-to information, then they might get that from an information product from me. So that's how I got into information products. And just to look at it from an economic point of view, you know, 80 pence for a book. our online information, our online learning programs. I've done mainly online learning programs that take about 7 weeks on the whole. And we sell them for between £35 and £45 each.
Okay.
And we get to keep most of that.
Yeah.
It's a lot more profitable than putting it all in a book that you get 80 pence for.
Sure.
But it's not about withholding information, and here's the bit. So shall I go through the 7 bits that we've identified?
Yeah, I think that would be really useful for people.
And again, just to give you a bit of background, I'm a voracious learner myself, and I've bought lots of information products from various people on the internet, some of which have been hugely helpful, some of which I felt utterly ripped off by and felt like I've been promised something and it's not been delivered to me. And I've created some information products that have been extremely successful, and in my early days I've created some information products that were not that successful. So with my colleague Nikki Hignett, who I think you know as well, don't you?
Yeah.
You know, we've over the last few years really done a kind of thorough study of you know, what makes a good information product, but B, what makes a profitable business around information products. So what we came up with was, if you like, 7 pillars. And if you like, I'll go through and share which each of them are quickly.
Sure.
And then the first one is kind of obvious, really, but your information product needs to help people achieve some kind of result in their life. You know, if you've got an information product that says, I'll make you a little bit happier, you know, it's kind of attractive, but it's not massively attractive. But if you create an information product that says, I can show you how to lose £3, you know, or £10 in the next 3 weeks, you know, eating food that you'd enjoy, if your information product allows, you know, says it will deliver that kind of result, then that's much more attractive. So number one thing is your information product must offer a result that people are interested in having in their own life. So it's got to be results orientated. So, you know, your information product is not about inspiring people to a possibility. Your information product is about helping people achieve a result in their life. So it's not about making massive promises that you can't deliver, but it's about giving tangible results that you can deliver to people in a reasonably short time through your information product. Does that make sense?
Yeah, no, completely.
Yeah. So anybody who's on this call, think about information products that you may have bought on the internet or anything like that. It's probably because you thought it was going to help you achieve something or learn something that was somehow significant to you. So I see, you know, in my coaching practice, and we run courses around, you know, helping people create their own information-based businesses, many people really struggle with this one because, especially for people that are very vocationally minded and are very passionate about what they do, their focus tends to be what they love doing rather than the results they help people get.
Yeah.
And that's where I think it often needs a kind of shift in our thinking. Often, you know, we're so thinking about our coaching or my speaking or my writing. What we're forgetting to think about is, what do I help people achieve? What can I help people achieve? So A, it must be a result that people are interested. You know, so one of my most successful information products was a program called Discover the Work You Were Born to Do. Because Rick, who I mentioned earlier, looked at my book, The Work We Were Born to Do, and it's 350 pages.
Yeah.
And he said, really, the question most people are asking is, how do they discover the work they were born to do?
Yeah.
So I created a 7-part online learning program called Discover the Work You Were Born to Do to give people the tools to discover it for themselves.
Yeah.
And that was one of our most successful products. And, you know, again, the paradox, it was £35. You know, people could get a lot more material in the book for £12.99. But one of the things that you're actually doing in a great information product is distilling the basic information that people need. So you're not overwhelming them with information.
Yeah.
You're actually editing the information.
I don't know. This is a very important distinction, actually, for people to note down. And that, I guess, distilling that information down to the critical elements will certainly... I can only imagine it increased the probability that the people reading that material will actually move towards results as well.
Yeah. You know, because, you know, if you've got to go through 27 CDs, 13 e-books and 4 special reports to learn how to do something, you're probably going to lose, you know, motivation.
Yeah.
A couple of weeks. You know, you want it distilled.
Yeah.
Not trivialized, but distilled.
Yeah. That's a very important point.
So number one is, you know, you need to create an information product that helps people achieve a result that they're interested in achieving.
Yeah.
And obviously then you need to be thinking, if you've already got some kind of niche going, you need to be thinking about, well, how do I find the people that want to achieve that result?
Yeah.
So when you're designing your products, you know, you need to be thinking about, what results can I help people get, and how do I find the people that are going to want those results?
Sure.
Yeah. Okay.
Cool.
So the second pillar, and we've called it seven pillars, the second pillar, is that you need to obviously be seen as some kind of, and I'm not saying the, but some kind of expert source of information for that result. Because in a way, you know, and that's the upside of the internet and the downside of the internet, is these days anybody can make any kind of claim about what they can help you achieve.
Yeah.
So the second bit is you've got to have some kind of credibility, really. And I'm not saying that you have to have written six books and you've got a PhD. You know, these days, I think in the old days, you know, an expert was somebody who had written books, who did have a PhD and had done a lot of academic learning. These days, I think we're also very drawn to people whose expertise comes from their own life experience. So I think one of the reasons I've been reasonably successful, for example, is because I do not teach anything that I have not lived myself. You know, I have moved from the corporate world, I've set up my own business, I've run it for 17 years, I've made tons of mistakes, and I've had a number of successes. Everything I talk about comes from my own life experience. So when I coach people around fear, when I coach people around money, when I coach people around purpose, I can speak with authority because these are all questions I've, you know, struggled with and battled with myself.
Yeah.
So the credibility comes from a number of areas. It comes from, you know, demonstrations. You know, have you written books, you know, or articles? Do you have kind of qualifications? Or basically, you know, one of the ways is if you've got any kind of practice or business running around this already, you'll have already helped people achieve a number of results. And I think these days, you know, if you can say, you know, my credibility comes from having helped, you know, 150 people already achieve this result in my coaching practice, people are going to take you seriously.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter whether you've written a book about it or not. If you've helped people just like them achieve that result, people are going to start taking you seriously.
Yeah. That's definitely one thing that with my clients as well, like I'm always encouraging clients to gather up the success stories of their clients in the form of testimonials, because it does add so much credibility to the results you are creating.
Yeah, you know, because I think there's nothing simpler and nothing more powerful in a way than to say to people, I can help you achieve this, and here's the story of the other people that I've already helped achieve this.
Yeah.
It more or less just puts you in a position of credibility straight away.
Yeah, yeah.
And to some extent, people don't care whether you've got any qualifications. They don't care whether you've written a book on it. They just want to know, can you help me achieve this?
Yeah.
And if you can demonstrate genuinely and authentically that you can help people achieve it, they'll listen to you.
Yeah.
You know? So it's about developing your expert status, you know, or your expert platform. And I'm not talking about, you know, making claims that aren't true. So don't claim that you're an expert when you're not. But I think there's a continuum between knowing nothing about a subject and being a world expert on it, and all of us are somewhere in between there.
Yeah.
But I think many of us find it hard to find out what's our current level of expertise, if you like.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, so I'm all for just to, you know, engage with your current level of expertise, where you can authentically say, I can help people achieve certain results. And then look at how you can build up your credibility. You know, like, for example, a guy I was coaching recently, you know, didn't have many, he was a creativity coach, and he didn't have many success stories about people that he'd coached. So I said, well, why don't you send out an email to your database and just offer to coach three people, you know, four times each to help them achieve particular results. On the basis, you don't charge for it, but you then, you know, ask for their permission up front to be able to tell their stories of what you helped them achieve.
Yeah.
Because that would bump up his credibility straight away, because he could demonstrate the results that had already helped people achieve.
Yeah, that's a great tip for people, particularly people that haven't had the opportunity to develop a track record. I think that's a really good bit of advice.
You know, so you're right. You know, track record is probably one of the most important aspects of expertise.
Yeah.
You know, and you know, anybody listening to this might also just want to think, it's like, how do you know whether to trust somebody or not? How do you make decisions about whether to trust somebody or not? Because, you know, when people are always going to be doing that to you too. So what makes you trust somebody? And then you think about, well, how do you present yourself in that way that's authentic and is real and has integrity, but then gets people to genuinely trust you? So, you know, you can think about that a lot. Anything like, you know, having articles written or being interviewed or any kind of media coverage, obviously, you know, adds to expert status.
Yeah.
Because an expert is not just somebody who knows a lot. An expert is somebody who knows how to build a platform around what they know, knows how to build credibility and visibility around what they know. But also another important aspect of expertise is knowing how to share what you know.
Yeah.
And just knowing a lot doesn't make you an expert.
Yeah.
you know, I don't know about you, but I've certainly been in the presence of people that I know are experts in their area, and they know a massive amount about their subject, but they present it in such a way that it's just like a mishmash, and it's like you have to be an archaeologist and kind of filter through what it is that, you know, they're saying to figure out the bit that applies to you.
Yeah.
And I think one of the good things about being an expert is that a true expert never forgets what it was like to be a beginner and not know what they know.
Yeah.
So that's the paradox of an expert, is an expert knows a lot, but an expert also knows how to engage with people who know nothing.
Yeah.
Or just beginning their journey. And to me, that's a true expert. A true expert talks to other experts, and a true expert talks to absolute beginners and has rapport with both of them.
Yeah, that's a very important distinction.
Yeah. Okay, so that's anything else on that?
Okay, so number two, yep.
Yeah. The third one is, you know, and this is, to be honest, from my experience of buying other people's information products, this is the least understood aspect of creating good information products. Most people that create information products are not teachers. They are probably entrepreneurs or practitioners. And, you know, they would not have had, you know, understandably, they wouldn't have had experience in teaching. And another skill of a good expert is to know how to teach what you know.
Brilliant.
And I think one of the biggest problems when I coach people, you know, I just see this over and over again, they say, but I've been doing this for 15 years, I know so much about it. How am I going to cram everything I know into an information product? The answer is you don't. The biggest market for anybody, probably with an information product, is the beginner's market for their subject. You know, like I said earlier, the biggest market for information products for me was the simple product of how do you discover the work you were born to do. Not how do you make money out of it, not how do you turn it into an entrepreneurial, you know, business. It's how do I discover what I'm here for. That's the biggest market. That's the beginner's market, if you like. So you don't teach everything you know. You take people on a series of learning journeys. And this is where a lot of people go wrong. They try and develop a product that either is just a stream of consciousness. It's just, I'm going to tell you everything I know in this information product, and you have to figure out which bits apply to you and which bits don't.
Yeah.
Or they try and teach people too much and overwhelm them.
I must imagine that, I suppose, like, it not only overwhelms their audience, but it... Like from an information creator, product creator, it must be overwhelming for the information product creator as well, because they're thinking about all the ideas that they've got running around their head,
yeah,
and how they can actually express that into some sort of form and give,
yeah,
it justice, rather than actually thinking about the critical elements that are,
yeah,
right for that member of the audience at that particular time.
Yeah. You know, and the biggest shift, you know, around this, and, you know, this comes from Rick's Inspired Teaching course, which is an information product, you know, that we,
yeah,
provide as well, is... not to think about what you want to talk about, but to think student. The difference is what do I want to tell them. The question is, what do they need to learn?
Yeah.
And this is where, in a way, you have to get out of your own mind and into the mind of the student and say, right, you know, take an example. You know, if I'm talking about my discovery program, this is aimed at people who are in a job, who are not necessarily happy, who'd like to discover work that would be more exciting and more fulfilling for them, and just have an awareness of what that might be. So what I had to do was not talk about my 16 years of experience about running my own business. I had to cast my mind back 18 years to when I was stuck in the corporate world and ask myself the question, what did I need to know 18 years ago that would have really helped me along my journey just to discover the thing that I really wanted to be doing? So it's not to think about what I know, it's to think about what I needed to know back then and what anybody else in that kind of similar situation would need to know. So the core thing around creating information products is to think student.
Yeah.
Because if you're really clear who it's aimed at, if you're really clear where they are, and if you're really clear where you can get them to, and then you design a learning journey or a series of learning journeys to get them there, you will have incredibly grateful students who will then want to come back to you for more information products, because each of your products has helped them learn something, helped them move on, and then they want to come back for more.
Yeah. And did you find that, like, when you were going through that process yourself, did you find that quite a natural process to actually begin with a beginner's mind? Because I know there are lots of people on the call that are very, very experienced within their particular fields, and they may experience challenges around just, like, I guess, stepping out of that, all the amazing knowledge that they have, into,
yeah,
the shoes of that person,
yeah,
starting out.
Yeah.
Did you personally find that a challenge? Or?
To be honest, that is the hardest part of my shifting my mindset has been to think about what people need to learn, and in a way to become, you know, make that shift from being an inspirer to an educator.
Sure.
You know, because that's the shift, is when you're a good educator, your focus is on your students.
Yeah.
The people that are coming to you for help, they need to be your focus. So you're not saying, what would I love to tell them about? What's hot for me at the moment that I can tell them about? That's the wrong question. The question is, what do they need to know?
Yeah.
And, you know, and this is where I think a lot of people struggle, actually, to make this transition, because it's actually a bit of a dent to our ego.
Yeah.
Because our attention has to shift away from us to our students. In a way, you're there to serve your students. You're not there for you.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
That's really powerful, actually.
Yeah.
It's a very powerful distinction.
We get into our ego sometimes, especially if, you know, we're wanting to be the great, you know, inspirer or the great whatever we are.
Yeah.
Like, actually, it's quite a humbling experience to say, I'm here to serve my students. I'm here to be a good teacher for my students.
Yeah.
But a good teacher is one who's focused on their students, not who's focused on themselves.
Yeah, yeah.
And that transition, that mental transition from knowing a lot to teaching what you know, can be incredibly challenging, but so rewarding. You know, I know all of us have had probably the experience of great teachers and being taught by them, and the experience of being taught by lousy teachers, and we all know what it's like to be taught by a fantastic teacher. It's a real blessing.
Yeah.
You know, so to learn how to become a great teacher of what you know is an incredible blessing. And also the other side of it, which I love, is it's great business.
Yeah.
You know, because instead of trying to take people on a massive, you know, 52-week learning journey, you know, the first information products I did were 52 weeks long, you know. Looking back on it, it was like people had probably lost the will to live by then. They'd forgotten why they signed up for it in the first place.
Sure.
So none of my information products now are more than 7 weeks long. People get an online learning program, one lesson a week for 7 weeks. And then by the end of those 7 weeks, they'll have really got a result in their life.
Yeah.
And then the wonderful thing is they then come back for the next bit of the jigsaw.
Yeah.
You know, and they're glad because they've been taught, they've learned, they've got what they wanted, then they come back for some more. Whereas if you try and put too much in it, A, they'll probably never finish it, and B, they'll never come back for any more because it was too big. It was just more than they could deal with.
Mm. And that really just must flow out of having a real affinity for your students and really getting really clear about the results that step number one that you're trying to help them create.
Yeah, yeah.
Brilliant.
And you'll have grateful students and, you know, good teaching is good business.
Yeah.
You know? So I don't talk about, you know, chunk it down into shorter learning journeys just to make more money. I'm just saying that's a much better way of learning. If you can learn something great in 7 weeks, you're much more motivated to come back and learn some more than if you've, you know, created a learning program that takes you up to 12 months and half the students have dropped out by halfway through it.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, they ain't going to come back to you again.
Yeah, that's an important point.
Paradoxically, good teaching is good business. And that's the real confidence bit as well, is, you know, to be zen-like in your teaching, because I think, again, there's a tendency quite often to expand and to over-explain things. And sometimes the zen-like approach is just to give them the essence.
Yeah.
Just give them what they really need to know and not embellish it. And in a way, have a confidence in your own expertise, that you know the golden nuggets that they need to know, and you just give them the golden nuggets.
Brilliant. Excellent. So step number four. What's step number four for people?
Paradoxically, this is where most people start, you know, because pillar number four is then think about what product you actually want to create.
Okay.
And I think most people come at information products the wrong way round. They say, I'm going to create an e-book, I'm going to create a CD series. Oh, what should I create it on?
Yeah.
And really, you've got to do those first three steps to then figure out, well, what's the best product? Because really, you know, the distinction you have to make in your mind is the product is simply a delivery mechanism for your expertise and your teaching.
Yeah.
It's nothing more than that. So whether you do an e-book or MP3 downloads or CDs or online learning programs, they're simply delivery mechanisms. They're not the thing in itself.
Yeah. I was going to say, like, in terms of the feedback that you receive from the many purchases of your products, what have you found has resonated with people more? Is it the actual written ebook form material or audio, the audio form?
Well, I've sold hundreds of CDs, but on the whole, CDs tend to be more the ones I've done have tend to be more kind of inspiring people to possibilities. They've been live talks that I've just recorded,
okay,
or kind of discussions on subjects. I found the most effective things we've done have been the online learning programs that, you know, usually split into 7 weeks.
Yeah.
We've sold hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of
them, yeah,
over the last few months. Because then they're nice and easy to handle. You know, 7 weeks and you'll learn this. You know, people find that exciting possibility.
Yeah, yeah.
They think in 7 weeks' time I'm going to know how to do something that I don't know how to do today. Whether it's, you know, inspired teaching, which is to, you know, teach people how to take their material and put it into a course or a talk. We've got one on establish yourself as an expert, where after 7 weeks you'll have kind of figured out your expert niche and how you're going to start creating it. The one about discovering the work you were born to do. You know, they're lovely bite-sized chunks that people are really, you know, willing to have.
Yeah.
We just launched one, which we, you know, we might talk about, which is, you know, with what I'm talking about tonight, we've run as a course several times, how to create information products, and now we've turned that into itself, into an online product, if you like, you know, an information product. We've actually delivered that one by as a PDF file, so it's like an e-book.
Okay.
But here's the thing, you know, because there is so much free information on the internet, you know, a big question that most people ask, and if you're not asking it, you should be, is like, well, why would people buy your information when there's so much free information on the internet already?
Yeah.
And that's why those first three pillars are so important, because one, the two major reasons are because it's going to give you a result that you want and you're willing to pay for that, and secondly, because the free stuff is from dabblers and you're an expert and you're charging for it. So that's another reason why it's so important to be perceived as some kind of expert,
yeah,
is that then people are willing to buy your information from you, as opposed to somebody who's just, you know, a dabbler who's kind of working in their back bedroom and saying, well, I've got a whole bunch of ideas here, I've never done them myself, but, you know, you might want them. You know, you want to learn from somebody who really knows what they're talking about and has got the experience.
Yeah.
So that's why it's so important to have your own kind of expert status, if you like, because then people will buy what you know, as opposed to expecting it for free.
Cool. Okay, excellent. So, so pillar number four is just understanding that the actual form. How about what's pillar number five?
Number five is knowing how to communicate the benefits of what you do. You know, I think especially kind of vocationally minded people, you know, shrink away from the word sales. You know, and I have for many years. And I think for many of us, it's finding a comfortable point where, if you like, we toot our own horn, but we don't show off. So the distinction I make is show up, don't show off. If you've got a great product that can really help people, you need to be able to explain how and why it's going to help people. So you need to be able to explain benefits, you know, and we call that sales, really. So
yeah,
you need to be able to, you know, sell your product and let people know what they're going to get from it. And again, I don't mean about hyping it, and I don't mean about going out of integrity. I just mean genuinely explaining what people are going to get by the learning journey that they go on through your product.
Brilliant.
Yeah, so that's sales.
Excellent.
The sixth one, you know, is pretty simple, really, and it's something I know you're an expert on, really, is, you know, the whole systems around, it's really the systems pillar.
Yeah.
And systems are really just about, you know, everything around online products. You know, digital products can be automated. You know, you can create through autoresponders, you can create emails that go out to people that sign up for your free product, for example. They can be sent regular emails, they can buy it, you can distribute the product, the money can turn up in your bank account, all that can be systematized.
Yeah.
You know, and I know this is the one thing that makes information products so appealing to people, is that you can make money easily and effortlessly.
Yeah.
And, you know, I know that's possible, but that bit will only happen, the sales and the systems bit only really happen when you've done the first four things, which is you've actually got some really great material and you're seen as a great source of it.
Yeah.
And it's easy, relatively easy to set up the system, to set up the systems to do it, but you've got to have something really good to sell in the first place.
Yeah, no.
But the actual systematizing of it is not difficult at all.
Yeah, good point that you draw on there as well, where it does become really compelling when you know that you can absolutely automate the delivery of your expertise,
yeah,
so you can actually get paid for not working effectively,
yeah,
if it's set up and all automated in an appropriate way, which is certainly for my own personal self, it's what drew me into the arena. And certainly I know, like a lot of people who are entering the arena, find that very appealing.
Yeah, sure. And it's, I think it's what draws most people into it. But I think that's why there's also so many disappointed people around, is because they think just because you can automate something that it's going to work. You know,
yeah.
It's only really going to work when you've got the integrity and the credibility and actually a really good product.
Yeah.
Because otherwise, you know, as I say, I bought products from people and I've just felt utterly ripped off. And I thought, well, they did a brilliant job of selling it to me. They promised results. But when I got the material, it was absolutely crap and I would never deal with them again, ever.
Yeah.
So I'm very interested in helping people build sustainable businesses, you know, so that, you know, they grow and grow over years and get to become a trusted source of great ideas and information in people's lives so that people recommend them and they come back for more.
Yeah, that just makes great business sense as well.
Yeah, I'm not interested in people that just want to make a quick buck and rip people off. That really doesn't interest me at all.
Yeah.
And then finally, the seventh pillar is learning how to market what you do. Because you can have all the systems, you can have a great product, you can be a credible source. For those of you that have already got offline businesses, you know, your first pool to fish in for your clients for digital products would be your existing client base. You know, you may well find that there's people who will, you know, buy your products because they've already dealt with you or they already know you. So it's learning how to get new clients for your products. So there's really three ways, you know, obviously any information-based business is web-based. It will be based on from your website. And really, you know, in essence, what you want is you want traffic to come to your website. And really, there's three different ways that you can get traffic to come to your website. And in essence, I'll just give you a quick overview of those. There's traffic you borrow, traffic you buy, and traffic you create. So if you've already got an offline business working, you've already created some kind of audience for yourself. So there's the audience you create for yourself by... you know, your own offline business, by doing PR, by having articles written and putting them on the internet or in print media. Any way that you can do that drags people back to your website to have a look at you, that's traffic that you create yourself. Traffic that you buy is things like, you know, pay-per-click on Google. You know, I don't personally understand all that stuff particularly. I know it's a dark art that I don't personally understand very much. But traffic you buy is traffic that, you know, basically people... You pay to have people come to your website through pay-per-click advertising and all those kind of things that you can do, or page impressions or advertising on other people's websites. That's traffic you pay for and you bring to your website. My favorite way of getting traffic is traffic you borrow. And it sounds like a funny expression, but traffic you borrow is where, you know, say with my, you know, discovery program, discover the work you're born to do, I can go, and I have done, gone to other audiences. You know, I can go to somebody who's got a database of, say, 5,000 people and say, you know, some of your people may be interested in my product. If you send out an email to your database, you know, a percentage of them will come back to my website if you endorse me. They will, some of them will sign up for a free product, and then some of them will end up being my customers. You know, and I'll pay you a percentage of every sale we make as a result of that. That's
yeah.
Traffic you borrow, because you're really getting it from somebody else, and you're just borrowing it, but then it becomes your, you know, then they become your customers.
Mm.
But I'm a great believer that joint venturing and kind of affiliate work like that is one of the most high leverage ways of growing an information-based business, because if you're trying to find all your clients yourself, it can be hard work. And the easiest way is to try and find people that are willing to kind of, you know, who know you, like you, and trust you, and who are willing to introduce you to their client base and give you, you know, a good introduction.
Yeah.
So that you find the audience that would really be interested in your products through other people.
Yeah, I couldn't actually agree more with that, because it's just a really, really important way of actually building rapport with a new group of people.
Yeah.
It's through leveraging the context of your own existing network.
Yeah, and, you know, if you're willing to do that, you'll be amazed at how much, you know, possibility there is out there waiting to be tapped into.
Brilliant. I just want to find out a little bit more about an upcoming workshop that you've got coming up in London, Nick. But I was just wondering, just for the benefit of everyone on the call, if you could just give us a very, very quick snapshot in bullet form, the seven pillars, just so people on the call can actually make sure that they've got all that information.
Yeah. Well, so results. Number one, results. Number two, kind of build your credibility and expert status. Number three, become a good teacher of what you know. Number four, then know how to design and create the physical or the digital products that are actually going to distribute what you know. learn how to create good copy for your website that really conveys the benefits of what your product's going to do, number five. Number six is learn how to automate the process so that it all becomes easy and effortless. And number seven is learn how to create bigger audiences and how to market your information products to wider audiences and create bigger audiences.
Brilliant. Yeah. Excellent. Like, you do have a program coming up in September which teaches people how to actually create their first £2,000 creating information products, which I think might be really, if people have enjoyed the call this evening, that they'd certainly get a lot of value out of that program. And I was just wondering if you could share a little bit more about the actual event.
Yeah, well, again, as I look around the internet, I see all these people promising that you can become a millionaire by selling information products. You know, I know some people have become millionaires, you know, but we haven't sold millions of pounds worth of information products. We've sold tens of thousands of pounds worth of information products. And having worked with a number of people, I know that, you know, most people would be just thrilled to bits to sell their first information product.
Yeah.
So in a way, we set the bar very low and said, we'll show you all the things that you need to know to be able to create your first £2,000 from information products, because that seems very manageable, and most people would just be thrilled to learn how to do that. You know, so what we do is we take those seven pillars and then teach you all the know-how information, if you like, around that.
Yeah.
So we've turned that into a seminar, and we've run it a number of times. I say we, I do it with my colleague Nikki Hignett, who's also the internet marketing and the kind of software website side of the business as well. And the key for us is it's how to create your first £2,000 from information products, and then in brackets, with integrity and without the hype. Because I hope people get, you know, that I'm not somebody who's a hype person. I don't, you know, try and overpromise. I'd rather underpromise and overdeliver than the other way around. So we've created this course, and that course is available in three different forms. It's a live event in London on September the 30th. It's a five-part teleseminar that you can join wherever you are in the world. I think it starts in October. But you're going to send out information about this, aren't you?
Yeah, I will let people know. Yep.
Yeah, and then it's also available as an information product itself. So you can buy it as a, you know, a PDF file which you then download, and you just work through all the material yourself. You work through the seven pillars and do all the exercises, and that will help you really focus your thinking. So it's the same product developed, delivered in three different ways, as a live event, as a teleseminar, and then as an online product itself.
Excellent. Now, certainly... Just want to endorse those products as well, because I suppose having seen you develop over the years and certainly had an experience of many of your products, Nico, every single one that I've read or enjoyed has certainly had a profound impact on the way that I've certainly moved into the online information business arena. So I definitely can endorse the products themselves and know that they'll be very valuable for people.
Yeah, well, I think there's enough crap out there, but there's a really good material still as well.
Brilliant. Excellent, Nick. Well, you shared some amazing concepts over the course of the last hour, and I just thought now's a perfect time to actually open the call up for people who may have additional questions to ask you.
Yeah, time for a couple of questions.
Yeah, so
and you're going to send out an email with the link to the website about all these products.
Right? I will do that.
Yeah.
So if you do have a burning question that you'd like to ask Nick around the whole information product creation process, if you could just press 6 on your phone right now to unmute yourself, and as soon as you ask your question, if you could then re-mute yourself by pressing 6 again. And the question could be anything at all about the information creation process.
It's too technical, though, because I'm not so much the website of it. I'm more the product creation.
The content side of things.
Any questions?
Okay, who's going to ask a question?
Good evening. Can I ask you a question?
Sure.
Hi, Damien. It's Robert White.
Ah, Robert, how you doing?
Well, thank you. Nick, I very much enjoyed your session. I came to it slightly late, and this is just 5 minutes or so. But very much enjoyed it. What would you say for someone coming into this business that's completely new to it, if you take your point about getting your messaging right and how you want to communicate and what is the concept of integrity, what you want to create and put out there, what do you feel is the best type of product to start creating from day one? Would it be a PDF file? Would it be CD sets? Or would it be a report or something? What would be the most
again, you know, my recommendation is to go back a step and say, well, what is your expertise? What can you teach people? What can they learn from you, and what results can you help them achieve? And you've got to really answer those questions before you then think about, well, what's the best form to put it in. So I'd suggest that you have to go back to that bit first. And, you know, I'd say that obviously one of the easiest things to do is to create things like ebooks, because they're relatively easy to do. There's no audio recording involved. Or things like online learning programs, because they're just discrete emails that you send out once a week. As soon as you get into audio, then you add new dimensions to it, because you have to record it, you have to edit, and all sorts of things.
So in terms of ebooks, what should an ebook be in terms of size? Should it be 50 pages, 100 pages, and also what kind of price level?
Again, you know, it's not about how many pages it should be. It's about, you know, what are you teaching people?
Right.
But you don't pad it out for the sake of padding it out. You take people on a learning journey that you deliver via an ebook.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, again, it's like you've got to think of it the other way around. It's like, what are you going to teach people? What are they going to learn? And then how, you know, in a way, how quickly can you take them on that journey?
Okay, great. I think that's starting at the end and working backwards, and
yeah.
the right way to do it. Yeah.
You know, don't get too caught up on the products. The products are the easy bit.
Yes.
It's the teaching and the learning journey that takes the investment of time and energy.
Right. Okay, thank you very much, Nick.
Thanks, Robert. Great question. I probably have time for one more. So if you do have a question, if you'd just like to press 6 to unmute yourself. And once you've asked your question, just 6 again to mute yourself.
Hello, Amanda here.
Hi, Amanda.
Hi there.
Hi. Terrific information. Thank you ever so much. I've been frantically scribbling here.
We'll get a recording tomorrow, I think.
Brilliant. Excellent. My question is around pricing.
Yeah.
If you've been kind of running courses offline and you've done various workshops and different things, that you've perhaps charged people maybe a few hundred pounds or so, when you come to package this into information products, one of the biggest challenges I've had has been pricing. And I find as I've looked at things, I've either ended up pricing it far too low so it's virtually given away, or I've looked at it and thought, well, does it take it off the other end of the scale? What kind of advice would you give around pricing?
For example, when we priced our online learning programs, Rick was quite keen that they wouldn't be too expensive, that they'd be very accessible to people. We then sell higher volumes. So the course he put into, say, the Inspired Teaching Program, it's a 7-week course. As a live event, that would have been around probably £65-70. As an online learning program, it's £45.
For 7 weeks?
Yeah, for seven individually delivered lessons over 7 weeks.
And what would they get in that then? Would that be purely just like email lessons that come through?
Yeah. A very guided, specific process that if you followed it through, you would take your expertise, and by the end of those 7 weeks, you will have designed a talk or a workshop around it.
Right.
And for anybody on this call, it would be great. You know, you could design your information product using that information product. If you know what I mean. Just to give you another example, with our £2,000 program that I was just talking about, as a live event, it's £349, but we only have 14 people on it, so it's very individual attention. As a teleseminar, it's $249, and again, only about 12 people on it. And as an information product, it's £97.
Right.
It's the same basic information delivered in three different forms. And, you know, what people do pay for with your live events is the personal attention. So, you know, I would suggest, on the whole, I would suggest that your information products be, you know, cheaper than live events. Although some people don't necessarily do it that way. But it all depends on, you know, what your market is. You know, if somebody is saying, right, my information product will make you £10,000 on the stock market in the next 12 months if you follow everything I do, but it will only cost you £1,000 to buy the information product, people might buy it for £1,000.
Right,
it all depends on how people value the result that they think they're going to get from it.
Right, thank you. That's been very useful.
Yeah.
Cool. Thank you, Amanda. And that actually brings us to the end of the call, Nick. And again, I'd just like to thank you so very much for sharing your incredible wealth of knowledge that you've gathered over the many years that you've been actually sharing great content with people. So
it's just been, thank you for inviting me on.
It's been a real pleasure to have you on the call.
Yeah. Yeah, well, you know, I hope it helps people along the journey. And if I can just, you know, recap what I said at the beginning, really, you know, for me, the motivation behind doing this must always be that you've got something great that you really want to share with people and it's going to enhance the quality of their lives. As long as you keep that your intention, then the rest of it you can learn.
That's very, very good advice. Now, for those of you who have enjoyed the call and were frantically taking notes and would actually like to listen to this call again, I'm actually going to make the call available on a website called peopleyoushouldmeet.com. So that hopefully will be up there first thing tomorrow morning. So you can download the recording, play it on your computer or your iPod, and certainly continue to benefit from the incredible ideas that were shared this evening. So I guess that brings us to the end of the call. So if you do, if you would like to say thank you to Nick personally, if you just press 6 now to unmute yourself, and we'll call it a wrap. So,
well, thank you very much for inviting me on. I hope you've got some ideas, and I wish you well, and stay in touch. Well, you know, you're going to send out an email, then people can get back in touch by.
I will, yes.
Send out one email.
I certainly will.
Yeah.
Cool.
If you've got any specific questions, by all means get in touch direct, you know, from the email that Damien will send out tomorrow.
Cool. Brilliant. Well, thanks very much, Nick.
It's been absolutely brilliant.
Brilliant. Well,
brilliant. Thanks a lot, Nick.
Yeah, thank you so much.
Cheers. Thanks, Nick.
Thank you, Nick.
Pleasure. Thank you.
Cool. Thanks, guys.
Yeah, cheers. Good night.
Take care. Bye.
Okay. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye.